Cambridge 105 Radio. Thank you, Steffi Vare, for the last 2 hours here on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome. Welcome indeed. Back behind the Bike Shed this week. And I'm delighted to say, joining me again, we have Mechanicking Rob Turner. He's a regular here. We're also joined by Triathlon, Crit Races and Road Racer Becky Hare. She's going to be chatting about the Climb Higher Together campaign to eliminate the huge disparities in women's cycle racing. And joining in that discussion, hopefully, we'll be joined by Rachel Davis, a member of Chatterer Cycling Club. She's also an ambassador to a couple of cycling brands, and she's done a lot to promote women's cycling, particularly out there in the Fens. And our guest on a bike this week is Ken Seaman. He's a long title, this, Director of Scientific Development and Global Collaboration, Cancer Research UK Cambridge Centre. Yes, very important job Ken has there. And if that's not enough, well, he's also going to be spinning up to play Spin That Wheel.
Ho, ho, ho! Celebrating Christmas across the city in South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome. Welcome indeed back to Behind the Bike Shed. And I'm delighted to say, as I said, joining us, we have, well, four people today. I don't think engineers are going to be very happy if they realise that. Completely busting any social distancing, but fortunately they're all sitting in their own bike sheds around the county. And Rob, you've had a busy week this week, haven't you, Mr. Turner?
Well, it's been a lovely week for cycling. It's been gorgeous out there, but yes, I've been up to Sheffield and roundabout delivering cargo bikes and doing my Santa act.
So as you were mentioning last time you were on, weren't you, how the cargo bike scene has really taken off, hasn't it? And it's not just in cycling cities, is it? It's now in what used to be considered non-cycling areas.
It's spreading well beyond. I even took one up to Stirling in Scotland not long ago. So it's commercial use which is coming on, and the e-bike is really pushing forward. It's a real transport solution to all sorts of problems.
Now, it always happens on Behind the Bike Shed. It's because we're all sitting in our bike sheds. Rob, you're going to have to come a little bit closer, if you can, to your microphone as we carry on chatting. Before we meet our other guests, here's a thought, Rob. Now, you're obviously got your cargo bikes. Do you have a big cargo bike, like an articulated one, where you take the new cargo bikes on when you're delivering them?
I have got one big enough, but its range isn't long enough. So, yes, there's a huge 2,500-litre one. Now, that's pretty big, isn't it?
So when you say its range not long enough, do you mean your legs aren't strong enough?
Well, that as well, because it's quite heavy. But, no, they're limited to about 40 miles.
Now, actually, before we do, and hopefully we'll chat about it during the programme, I have noticed it's literally like the last week particularly, there seems to be a lot of kickback, doesn't there, about all these the COVID sort of distancing regulation stuff they're bringing in, and all the traffic calming and all the excess cycle lanes we're having. People are getting their act together, aren't they? The people who aren't so keen on it.
I think cycling is just blooming at the moment, isn't it? I think people have had to try it, and they're finding they're enjoying it. So long may it last, and we've got to get the infrastructure right to keep people feeling safe and keep them wanting to cycle.
Yeah, I know, but as I just said to you, Rob, there's people, they're getting organised now, aren't they? We're even getting legal backing, and a couple of places where councils have had to take all that cycling infrastructure out again.
Well, some have, but I think it's that's a temporary thing. I think we're going to get over that. We're going to get moving forward, and that's not going to be an issue.
Okay, well, we're going to move forward now. I'm delighted to say joining us is, he's had a rush from the Addenbrookes campus as it happens, is Becky Hare. Becky, before we chat about why you're here, your campaign for women in sporting cycling, you're not a bad cyclist yourself, are you?
I'm okay. Yeah, I did Nationals this year for Hill Climb Camp. So, I did okay.
I think you're being a bit modest, aren't you? What was your okay?
I came ninth overall.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. What first brought you to cycling, Becky, especially on a sporting level?
Oh, well, my dad, so I was a swimmer as a kid and then went off to university and obviously didn't have a car up at Newcastle. And my dad just gave me his old little racing bike and it just about fitted me. So that was just my commuter for getting around uni. Then I did my master's in physiotherapy at Birmingham. Still had a little road bike, but then kind of started getting into triathlon whilst I was there. So got a better road bike, should we say, and then started racing a bit more and, yeah, just started taking it a little bit more seriously. Then I obviously started racing, but started doing draft legal racing and loved that whole kind of racing in groups and with, you know, 30 other women around the little crit course. And then I got taken on by Specialized as an ambassador in about 2017. So from then, I was doing cycle leading and bike maintenance courses and stuff for women. And obviously, that's just really enthused me and kind of pulled me away from triathlon and pulled me into cycling a little bit more. So, yeah, that's a very brief summary of it.
So just take you back to when you were in Newcastle. Was the reason you didn't have a car when you were in Newcastle is because they usually get nicked there?
No.
I just wondered. It's quite a perk, isn't it? Getting a bike you can take in your house at night.
Yes, definitely. Now, can't park one of those on your driveway.
We will get onto your Climb Higher Together campaign, I promise. Before that, I want to bring in Rachel Davies, who is no stranger to this programme. Rachel, now, since you last came on this programme, it seems every other week I see a picture of you in a different part of East Anglia with a different group of people in a coffee shop.
In a coffee shop?
Yeah.
Always like fighting for coffee. But, yeah, I think I've been furloughed for 6 months. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, that's better.
I've been furloughed for 6 months, so it was nice to sort of use that time just to get out on the bike and sort of go socially distanced with friends. Obviously, you know, you have to get that in, you know, sort of going out and about, and where it was possible to go to a coffee shop, we would be there, or a nice pub garden.
So all joking apart, though, have you found, even though we've been in this sort of lockdown situation, social distancing, have you actually found, has that put people off joining in the group?
No, in fact, we have seen a few more women coming to join the cycling club, and also friends who would have run as fitness beforehand, with sort of coming in to sort of saying to me, "I would never get on a bike. You'll never catch me cycling." And now they're approaching me saying, "I want to take up cycling. I want to get a bike. What do I need? You know, can you help me?" And I've had quite a few friends sort of approach me on that. So it's been great to see friends and that circle expanding, and like I say, more people coming to join the cycling club, not necessarily always as members. We have an official members group and a community group, but there's more people joining the community group, see if they like cycling, if that's for them, and then eventually sort of people are slowly starting to sort of take on the membership. But it's been a real positive. It's been great to see.
You've certainly been very busy. There's been a lot of social media stuff happening around you, hasn't there?
Yeah.
Now, before we do get on talking about the Climb Higher Together, look at it this way, Becky. We're not talking about the moment, but I do keep mentioning it, don't I? So that's a plus point for you. I'm just going to bring in our special guest on a bike today, and that is Ken Seaman. He is director. Very long title, Ken. I think it's the longest title we've ever had on Behind the Bike Shed. Okay, here we go. Director, Scientific Development and Global Collaboration, Cancer Research UK, Cambridge Centre. A long title, but I'm guessing a very important job.
Well, it's a role I've had for about 10 years, originally with Serve Responder as part of the Cancer Centre. I'm not quite sure what the remit is, but fundamentally, it's to try and allow the science that's going on in Cambridge to move as quickly as possible into the clinic to achieve patient benefit. And so I work with a lot of people to do that.
So, I mean, Ken, because you really are, aren't you? You're at the epicenter, aren't you, of basically a lot of the certainly pharma science happening in Cambridge.
There's a lot of collaborations going on with AstraZeneca, GSK, and many other companies that we're working with to really provide a quicker path into the clinic and into patients.
So we'll talk about this more when it comes to your slot, but don't worry, Becky, we'll get some time back from Ken in his slot so we can talk about your stuff, okay? This is how it works behind the bike shed. You know what it's like on a club
like
run.
It's
exactly
run.
The same, yeah. Ken, I'm sure really the headline news, the paragraph people want to hear. So are you or your colleagues at Cancer Research, are you having any collaboration over the COVID, the race to find a vaccine for COVID?
So the science going on in the cancer center is not fundamentally looking at the vaccine, but really what it's doing is it's really looking at how can we treat patients better who have cancer during the pandemic. What can we learn from this that will allow greater benefit to the detection and treatment of patients?
Now, you see, how many of us non-scientists would have never, ever thought about that possibility? And yet here you are jumping on it, you're looking on it, and you're thinking we've got to take our science in a different direction because of the world we live in.
Well, it was quite challenging during the lockdown because patients were not able to come in for their treatments. So a lot of modifications to standard protocols had to be made. And we're learning from that. We're learning the best ways to treat the patients. And are there other protocols that can be done under similar circumstances that will allow patients to benefit without getting as much side effect and without delaying treatment?
So that figure we heard today on the news about 4 to 5 million people who've missed out on scans, or not individuals, 4.5 to 5 million, obviously, because people can't get scanned as often as they needed to. That presumably is repeated across all the different sectors of medical. Then Becky.
Yes.
Becky's just got a hand up, actually. She's going to jump in. This is like University Challenge suddenly.
No, not at all. I just was going to say, it's really interesting hearing you speak. I work at Papworth Hospital, so yeah. I treat all the, I'm a respiratory physio, so I treat obviously all the thoracic oncology patients. And yeah, you're totally right. I think there are some silver linings of COVID, even, you know, it has turned some things a lot better for patients. So hopefully, you're doing grand work.
I think also what we're learning is because of the lockdown and the pandemic, we've had to communicate with patients remotely. And we're learning a lot from that, and that's sort of a vision for the future in terms of electronically and using IT systems. What are the best ways where we can communicate with our patients?
Rob, are you suddenly feeling like us when you hear these two talk that probably our roles in life aren't that important?
No, we've got our role as well. We're keeping the planet active, and that helps them get to the hospital for their treatment. So
that's what I like about you, Rob. You always find a good angle, don't you? So, Ken, very quickly before we go for a break, your interest in cycling, does that stem from a long time ago?
It stems, I've always been a cyclist, but it really stems from probably about 5 or 6 or 7 years ago when I found that my alpine climbing was suffering because of lower back pain. And I realized how enjoyable it was getting on a road bike and going out for 3 or 4 hours and feeling great when I got off the bike.
Well,
it also provided a huge opportunity to embarrass my children.
And also the other thing about your cycling, Ken, is you love taking pictures of churches, don't you?
I love going out on an early morning ride, going through the villages, taking pictures of churches, the fields and the pumps, and it's brilliant. And this whole area, early in the mornings during a spring day or a fall day, it's just fantastic. And I have a lot of family and friends back in the U.S. and I've posted these, and they just love seeing the surroundings.
It's a cracking start to tonight's Behind the Bike Shed. Stay tuned, and we shall be back after this break.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Christmas is a little different this year, and so is Questions Questions.
And on Cambridge Breakfast, we're supporting Cambridge City Food Bank's Warm Homes campaign.
It's helping families struggling with their energy bills during the winter months.
For every correct answer to our daily quiz, we'll make a donation to the campaign.
All thanks to those lovely people at Woodfines and the Cambridge Rotary Club.
and everyone who takes part goes into a draw to win an extra special Christmas hamper as our gift to you.
So join in with Julian and Lucy's Questions, Questions Christmas Advent Calendar Quiz, and together we can support Cambridge City Food Bank's Warm Homes campaign.
On Cambridge Breakfast, weekday mornings from 7.
Have you thought about what you need to do if you experience coronavirus symptoms? Help stop COVID in its tracks by acting quickly. Book a test straight away, online or call 119. Self-isolate immediately and only leave home to get a test. If you struggle with everyday tasks, ask your local support hub for help. Visit cambridgeshire.gov.uk. Remember, get tested, stay at home and seek support if you need to. There's no reason not to.
Did you know there's a way to support the Arthur Rank Hospice charity from the comfort of your own sofa? By playing our fundraising lottery at yourhospicelottery.org.uk. Your Hospice Lottery is a really easy and fun way to support your local hospice and costs just £1 per play per week. There are 176 guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs every week of the year from £10 to £1,000. Plus a rollover of £500 that could reach a massive £25,000. Playing the lottery provides much-needed income for the Arthur Rank Hospice Charity, helping us deliver care to those who need it most right now across our local community. You can play by monthly direct debit so you never miss a draw. This will provide a regular and reliable income that the hospice can really plan for. Join today at yourhospicelottery.org.uk. Over 16s only, please play responsibly.
Melody Brooker from Winter Comfort for the Homeless. 2020 has been a year like no other. The impact of COVID-19 has been profound on us all and has transformed the way that Winter Comfort supports the homeless community here in Cambridge. We've worked hard to adapt our day centre and our service provision to adhere to new guidelines and have continued to provide not only the practical support of hot meals, clothing, showers and laundry, but also the counselling, the training, education and advice that helps people to move out of homelessness. This Christmas, please help us to continue our vital work by donating online to our Christmas appeal. That's wintercomfort.org.uk. Thank you so much.
Merry Christmas.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Merry Christmas indeed from Behind the Bike Shed. Delighted to say with me Behind the Bike Shed today we have Ken Seaman, who is our guest on a bicycle, very clever man from Cancer Research UK, Rachel Davis, who is from a member of Chatterer Cycling Club, and Mechanicin Rob, who is of course a regular. It wouldn't be the same without Mechanicin Rob, would it? And also we have Becky Hare. Now Becky, you're here to chat about Climb Higher Together campaign. Tell us about it.
I am indeed. So this is a campaign to get women talking about racing, to plant the seed about getting women sort of started, but also just to share our stories. So it, you know, it isn't really all about racing, but we want to just get women cycling, staying in cycling, and continuing to have the conversation with, you know, everybody really. So it started this year about September time. It was just before the National Hill Climb Championship, and there was a huge push by Reading Cycling Club to get more women into the National Hill Climb Championship. They have got some fantastic women on the committee, and they thought that this event would be the perfect kind of pinnacle to try and get more women racing. The stats, if you're interested in that, normally there's about 11% of women in like time trials and hill climb championships. And Reading CC got it up to about 30% of women this year, which is huge. So they did a lot of social media campaigning to get more women entered. They got subsidies from local companies, and they paid for women's entries for the race. So there really was a lot of barriers kind of taken away from it. And then National Hill Climb Championship came around, and we thought, we want to keep this conversation going. We want everybody to share their stories, their inspiration, how they got into racing and hill climbing, because that was kind of what was going on at the time. So we started to use the hashtag Climb Higher Together. We've started it really on Instagram and Facebook. I'm not really on Twitter that much, but quite a few of the girls have used it on Twitter a little bit as well. It was, you know, share a photo of yourself, say what your barriers potentially were getting into racing, how you overcame them, ask other women if, you know, what their experiences are, try and find solutions together and just kind of come together as a whole. So yeah, we've been pushing it ever since then. Hill climb season has finished and we are hoping to continue to kind of keep it rolling into next year and when racing comes back properly from springtime onwards, I imagine. So we'll see, we'll see.
So you mentioned women having barriers into racing. Do you have any personal experience of that?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think I am I'm lucky. I'm obviously white, middle class and have, you know, the opportunities to go and join local clubs and the time, you know, I don't have kids or anything yet, to go and join local clubs. Sometimes there are barriers around any of those things I've just mentioned. My own personal one is I once went to a local club, turned up on my bike, and this was a couple of years ago, but I was still, you know, an all right cyclist then. And I'd messaged them saying, I'm coming down on an evening to come and join your chain gang session. And they said, I turned up and they were like, oh, well, we're going to have to put the slow group on now because that woman's here. And I was absolutely livid. I did the session with them because I think I was just that angry. I was like, well, I'm already here now, so I might as well do it. But afterwards, I just thought, you know, I'm a confident person. I'm a confident rider. And actually, anybody else would have just turned around and gone straight home and never come back again. My partner, I obviously came home, was livid. And just for the record, I did keep up with them. I didn't make a slow group. And actually, at the end, I was just like, I've got to try and like absolutely kick my butt and get my ass. But my partner was really good. And like, we talked it all through. And actually, I messaged them, I spoke to them. They are now a club that offer women's rides really regularly. So it did kind of come through as a good thing in the end, but it was a really not very nice experience at the time. So I felt like that was one of the first kind of barriers that I really definitely had. I suppose other experiences are like you turn up to races, the races get cancelled because there's only three women that are signed on or signed up to it. The women's races are always kind of lumped in with juniors or they're kind of, they're sometimes an afterthought, let's put it that way. And there was a big campaign this year because of prize money and no prizes in general. Some races put the women's races as a category called other, which was, you know, less than inviting. A couple of clubs, you know, it is kind of still the minority, but we still need to kind of talk about it. There was a few things over the summer and over the hill climb season where there might be like a pair of tyres for the women's winner, but £100 for the men's winner. And that kind of stuff, just that kind of addressing that inequality. So we've written an open letter to Cycling Time Trials and stuff to try and get that equality addressed. And it's not about the money. It's about, you know, whatever you're offering to the blokes, you should offer to the women as well. Yeah, that's kind of it, to be honest.
So, Rachel, do you have any personal experience from that side? From being a woman, did you ever feel when you first tried to get in the sport that it was difficult for you?
I think it was probably more that, sort of, I don't know, I think I'm probably, I've always worked in a male-dominated environment. I was a football coach for years as the only female coach. So I probably had worse in that rather than, so it being so much as in cycling, whereas probably it's more a case of, again, you know, like over the years, my cycling's improved, I've got a lot stronger, and whether it be, you know, sort of, oh, you go with that group because you're a female rather than, well, no, actually, I can keep up and I've got, you know, the strength and the power to ride with these guys. And I think when I first joined Chatter Cycling Club, there were, you know, I was probably one of three women in the club, but we could never all ride together because of commitments and so forth. So I had to go out and I had to ride with the guys and I had to keep up and I had to suck it up and I had to kind of feel like my lungs were going to explode. But for me, that helped me become a stronger cyclist quicker. But yeah, I think most of my sort of experiences really came more from sort of when I was coaching football than they have sort of in cycling. And I think there was a lot more of a divide, like I say, because I've been the only female coach in sort of Fenland or sort of this side of Cambridgeshire. And, you know, it would be, oh, let me know if you need any knowledge on football and, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas I have friends who've had negative experiences in cycling, a couple of my ambassador friends that, you know, that I'm an ambassador with. One of them does time trials. She was speaking about the same thing that you, the prize money, the just how they are an afterthought, how it is women in that side of sport being just the other, you know. And then, you know, I've got another ambassador friend who did the London to Newcastle. Three women, you know, that kind of thing.
But, you know, isn't there an advantage, though, if you're just a group of three women? Aren't you more likely to get looked after by the guys on a club run? No one wants to answer that one, do they? They're looking at me like, have you really said that? Look, the thing is, you see, I have said this before in this programme when we quite rightly talk about diversity and stuff. I come from cycling, sporting cyclists, from a period when it was a Cinderella sport. And maybe it was different then. So we're talking about the sort of 70s, 80s into the early 90s. But then you see everyone was accepted because you just wanted to ride with someone. And anyone locally who's listening to this programme to Cambridge, even nationally, will remember the name Jackie Harris. No guy would ever want to sprint with Jackie Harris when it came to a road sign or something like that, let me tell you. So I wonder if it's something which has come along more with the more number of people who are entering cycling. I mean, we're told this last year, because of COVID, that the numbers of people participating in cycling, this isn't necessarily cycle racing, this is generally getting on their bicycle, going to town, going out with the family at a weekend, just enjoying their bike. It's gone up 400%, which is a staggering number, really, isn't it, when you think that we had the Olympic effect anyway before that. But I do look at interestingly, that the number of people who are participating in competitive cycling, it hasn't gone up proportionally, if it's gone up at all. So maybe it's not a problem just for the ladies. It's also a problem for sporting cycling's image as well. Yeah, Becky.
The cycle industry has been really dominated by men, and women have really been treated very, very badly historically. Talked down to, and it's been an issue that needed to be addressed. I think it is being addressed now, and I think the upsurge in utility cycling has helped that, and the sporting cycling is definitely following that quickly behind. So hopefully things are changing.
And of course, Rob, you have you have one of the, don't you have a champion UK mechanic who works for you, doesn't she?
Oh, she does. Yeah. Catherine, our head mechanic, is a star. She leads the way.
So yeah, it's not just on the bike. You see, it's off the bike as well. They're getting it. I actually think though, as well. I mean, I think it's quite easy for guys, particularly the sort of guys generally go out in the cycle club and stuff. I think it's easy for people, and also I hope Rachel doesn't mind me saying this. Rachel has a lot of confidence. So, Rachel, no disrespect, you're not the average personality, are you? In the fact that you are quite, you know, you're not a wallflower, are you? I think it's fair to say that. Whereas for a lot of people getting into a sport anyway and trying it, I guess that's the sort of person you're targeting, Becky.
Yeah, definitely. And I totally agree. I feel like, you know, even hearing Rachel speak then, I feel I worked as a personal trainer and an Olympic, you know, strength and conditioning coach as well. So I've worked in a very male-dominated environment as well. And I think that does make you a confident woman who's able to speak up. So, yeah, what we've got to do is use our voices to speak up for the people that may not be able to. When I do my group rides around Cambridgeshire, often the barriers that come up are, you know, confidence in ladies going out and being able to do their bike maintenance if they get, you know, a puncture or something 30 miles from home, and definitely the sort of safety aspect of it. I was reading something yesterday, actually, I think it was in The Guardian, saying that Strava has looked at all of the uploads over the last 8 months or whatever, and the increase in women cycling was something like 45%. It had put up like this huge number of statistics. I've got it here on my phone. I'm just reading it. Yeah, 45% of the activities that were put up on Strava, you know, in the increase in just cycling was women, and the male increase was only about 10%. So that's massive. That's great. And I agree with you, Phil. I think it's not quite come through into racing yet. I think we just need to see women's racing on telly. And until we see that, people can't aspire to be there. So they sort of they don't see themselves in that role. I think that's another massive part of all of this, is that kind of media coverage of the women's side of cycling too.
Now, if you're just listening to this and you're sort of dialed in and you're tuned in and you think, oh, I'm not into cycling, this is quite interesting. Then actually, if you're thinking that, drop a note to the bosses here at Cambridge 105. But aside from that, just to let you know that Strava is a app which you can put on your phone, and it literally records how fast you're going, how much better you are than other people. I personally think it's for show-offs myself, not being a very fast cyclist. But it's a good way of personal, isn't it? Progress and stuff like that. And I think lots of sports have them, don't they, and runners now from it. I was just wondering, Ken, because I was thinking when both Becky and Rachel were chatting then, science, I get the impression that your environment, you've actually quite aware, aren't you, that, you know, women and the diversity role, and quite a lot's been done, hasn't it, to promote that?
There has been a lot done, but there still needs to be a lot more done. So within research and university environment, there's a lot of support infrastructure which is in place to try and help women scientists to really develop their own skills and actually develop their own careers even more. But it's still challenging. And it's challenging, one, because there's a lack of positions available that's very competitive. And there still are social aspects that need to be considered with regards to women scientists achieving and getting positions that they rightly deserve. So I think it is a challenge, and it will probably continue to be a challenge for quite a few years. And that's even in the face of some of the huge successes that we see with women scientists. I think you can even look at the success of the recent COVID vaccines, both from the company BioNTech and the Oxford vaccine, which are, you know, quite clearly led by women scientists. So that should be applauded, that should be recognized.
So maybe, you know, maybe it's just a case that, you know, us guys, I think we're a lot more aware than we used to be about this, aren't we? And all diversity, really.
I think it pervades everything, yes.
From that. Now, Becky and Ken, well, I've got you both here. You both work on the Adam Brooks campus. Rob and I have this ongoing thing about it. I think, as a visitor occasionally to Adam Brooks, the cycle parking for visitors is nuts. It's almost non-existent. It certainly isn't secure. My esteemed colleague, or that's what he tells me, Rob, mechanic in Rob. Now, Rob, the other week was telling me on here, 2 weeks ago, Rob, you were telling me how great Adam Brooks was for cycling and leaving your bike up there.
Well, I've got a good strong lock.
yeah, but my thing is there's not anywhere safe. Now, I'm assuming that there is for staff.
Yeah. Papworth has got a secure cycle storage area. You need an access card to get in.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. Ken, I guess you can store your bike safely.
So there is a locked area within one of the institutes, but I'm not sure that around the hospital, where most of the NHS is working, that there's any locked capacity for bicycles. It's sort of a free-for-all, trying to jam your bike in somewhere and then somehow fish your lock through various things to try and link it to the bike and hope that you haven't lassoed another bike.
You can come again.
Try and make it look like you're...
you can come...
Stop yourself from looking like you're stealing your bike as well.
Yeah, exactly, like yeah. Rob, do you feel outvoted? Are you going to have a rethink?
No, I just feel I'm a swashbuckler in terms of... cycle parking. I seem to be able to park wherever I like.
Yeah, but you've got a cargo bike, so you just crush our bikes, don't you, when you pull it up? I suspect that's the reality of it. No, anyway,
yeah, put the prop stand up and you can park anywhere.
It's a long-running campaign of mine, it's going to be. I just think it's a bit funny that the place, you know, where you go, the staff are looked after, which is great, but the customer, nah, put your bike anywhere. And yet they're telling me that I have to cycle up there. It doesn't make sense to me. Do I sound like I'm whinging? Yes, I do.
No, valid point.
I do sound, don't I? I apologise. I didn't. I probably shouldn't have said it like that. I can say that. Okay, coming up next, I promise we shall be speaking to Ken, the man you just heard, Ken Seaman. He is today's guest on a bike, and he's going to be playing. What's he going to be playing, Rob?
Spin That Wheel.
Oh, I've done so well.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Christmas is a little different this year, and so is Questions Questions.
And on Cambridge Breakfast, we're supporting Cambridge City Food Bank's Warm Homes campaign.
It's helping families struggling with their energy bills during the winter months.
For every correct answer to our daily quiz, we'll make a donation to the campaign.
All thanks to those lovely people at Woodfines and the Cambridge Rotary Club.
And everyone who takes part goes into a draw to win an extra special Christmas hamper as our gift to you.
So join in with Julian and Lucy's Questions Questions Christmas Advent Calendar Quiz, and together we can support Cambridge City Food Bank's Warm Homes campaign.
On Cambridge Breakfast, weekday mornings from 7.
Need dropping off at work? Missed the bus and must make that urgent appointment? Need picking up after a night out with your mates? Panther Taxis is your Cambridge-based taxi firm with over 700 drivers, offering great rates and local knowledge, ensuring you make it quickly and safely to your destination. We don't inflate our prices at peak times, and all our drivers accept payments by cash or card. Book your taxi the easy way. Download our free Panther Taxis app through your app store and start booking your taxis on the go. Call Cambridge 715 715 or see panthertaxis.co.uk. Panther Taxis, your local, quick, reliable and friendly taxi company in the city.
Just the flu. People say it every year. But in an average year, the flu kills 11,000 people and hospitalises tens of thousands more. There's no just about it. Flu is a virus that can cause serious complications. That's why we offer you the flu vaccine free. It's for your very best protection. Ask your pharmacist or GP if you're eligible for the free flu vaccine. NHS. To protect against flu, help us help you.
Christmas may be a little different this year. There'll be snowballs and Skype calls, Christmas socks and TikToks, gift wrap and WhatsApp, mulled wine and FaceTime, candy canes and online games. Make your Christmas connections stronger with a full fibre network. Visit cityfibre.com/Christmas.
Remember to leave the mince pie and brandy out for me.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And indeed, welcome back to Behind the Bike Shed. Coming up very soon, we should be meeting our guest on a bike, but they're all having a lovely little chat there on their little Zoom green room. And what they don't know is, though, I can listen in as well. I forgot to tell them that bit. So well done, you didn't talk about me. Coming up this evening at 9 o'clock, if you're listening to the Thursday show, which we are now tonight, rather than with repeat, this is O'Reilly Country with Brian O'Reilly presents the hottest country and Americano music around. A great show, that one. If you don't like country music, listen to Brian, because you soon will. And then Renegade Rock between 9 and 11, that's Mike. He's going to be rocking with his metal, indie, punk and grunge music. And we're going to get heavy with Blaze from 11 to midnight. All still to come here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Now, it's time.
It's time to play Spin That Wheel.
Indeed it is, because it's time we get to meet our guest on a bike. Ken Seaman, a man who I have seen out and about around the city of Cambridge on the academic stroke farmer side, who is a very busy man and a very clever man. Ken, how many farmer businesses do you think you've helped launch as a mentor over the years?
As a mentor, I've been involved in a lot of students who have entered many of the farmer companies and contributed to a lot of startups. In my own personal experience, I was involved in a small biotech company, Immudex, that brought to market the first biological drug for rheumatoid arthritis that really caused a sea change in treating advanced rheumatoid arthritis. So that was a huge, huge opportunity and benefit to the patients suffering from RA, but it was also extremely exciting to be there and make that type of contribution. in a previous life, when I was at the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. for about 16 years, we helped many companies bring a lot of products to market, including one of the largest companies, which is Amgen, which is developing a lot of drugs for many metabolic diseases, oncology treatment, as well as rheumatoid arthritis now. In the UK, we have a close partnership with our neighbors, AstraZeneca, and we're working very closely with them in a number of areas in terms of aerodigestive diseases and oncology. So I've been fortunate to be able to interact at both sides of the fence, so to speak, from a regulatory perspective, an academic perspective, and also as part of the pharmaceutical industry. And it's been actually quite rewarding over probably 35 years.
Now, you're not employed by the pharmaceutical industry, but obviously you have connections to the pharmaceutical industry. It's a bit of a red herring, isn't it, when people think that the pharma companies make millions and millions and billions, which they probably turn over. But isn't the reality, when you're launching some sort of drug, I don't know whether it was you or someone once told me, it's something like 1 in 1,000 drugs which people think about launching and start, only one of those ever gets to market, for want of a better word?
That's entirely true. About 1 in 1,000 from a drug discovery into commercialization actually gets to market. And that, and this has been argued quite a bit, because you have to factor in all of that investment that's being lost as you're trying to develop these 1,000 drugs, because you're having to cover all of your R&D expenses off the drugs that actually make it to market. So when you look at the actual profit that the company gains off a drug that makes it to market, it's using that entire profit to basically support the entire R&D effort.
Now, I could chat to you for ages about this. Actually, I often have, haven't I, to be fair? But you're here to talk about your cycling habits. Now, you're a man, you use your bicycle, don't you? We've heard that. You get out and about, and I'm guessing you use it as much as a stress buster at the weekends.
I love it. It's great.
You love it? And I've always mentioned you. Now, people, I don't know, you might not want everyone to follow you, but when you're on social media, you take some lovely photos when you're out and about, Ken. And what I love about it, you're now I've lived in these parts all my life, as my voice probably gives me away, tells you that. But what I find interesting about your photography, you look at where I live in completely different eyes from the rest of us, because we all just cycle past these places, but you actually stop, don't you? You get off your bike and have a good look around.
It's magic. It truly is magic. When you can, living in Cambridge, you get on your bike and within 5 minutes you're out of the city. And you're going through a field and you're seeing the mist or you're seeing the sun coming up. And you just capture that. It's beautiful. You bicycle another 5-10 minutes and you're going through a small village with a beautiful old church to the left and the required pub right to the right. And these are all beautiful buildings that have their own charm. And it's magical in the morning to see that. You're by yourself, a Sunday morning, nobody's on the road. And I just love those rides. It really is fantastic. So to be able to get some nice shots of those and share them with friends and family, it's really enjoyable.
You're a great ambassador, actually, aren't you, for the city of Cambridge, when I think about it, and South Cambridge here, because you're always promoting it, aren't you? Now, I can see sitting behind you in your study, you have a bicycle. That's a nice bicycle, isn't it?
So that was a gift to myself a few months ago, right? It's a far better bicycle than I am a bicyclist. That's true.
That's the best bike to have.
It's a Trek Domani.
Yeah.
Very nice.
You're quite modest though, Ken, because you actually do go out, you do a fair bit of mileage, don't you? You do it in a fair time. Now, what we're going to do now, everybody, we are going to play. What are we going to play, Rob?
Oh, spin that wheel.
Yeah, so it's...
It's time to play Spin That Wheel.
Actually, that was Tony Barnfield, the voice of Spin That Wheel. And I have to say...
He's better at it.
Yeah, he's a lot better than you are, Rob. Tony Barnfield, he is the Sage Voice of Radio, an award winner just the other weekend. So thank you, Tony. And He's a keen supporter of his programme, and when you work out Tony's pedigree and who he's interviewed, where he's interviewed and where he's worked in his life, I'm very humbled that he takes an interest in us. So thank you, Tony. Now, Ken, you can back out if you wish. This is the quiz, the cycling quiz, which everybody wants to play. The great thing about this quiz is, though, Ken, you'll know the answers before I know the answers. You'll get every answer right. And it's fun, but there's no prizes. So are you ready to play?
Go for it, Phil.
Okay, so what is this? You'll hear the, once we start, you'll have 3 minutes, 180 seconds to answer these questions. Answer them as much depth as you wish, as much detail as you wish. It doesn't matter if we don't get through them all, because it's all very interesting stuff for people. So
let's play Spin That Wheel.
What's your earliest memory of cycling, Ken?
My earliest memory of cycling was growing up, and I was 8 years old, and I had just bought baskets for my old Schwinn.
What type of cycling do you enjoy most?
I enjoy road cycling on a very flat, nice road.
Yeah, so you obviously like cycling around Cambridge, don't you?
I certainly do.
Was that the big attraction?
It's a huge attraction to me being around Cambridge, yes.
And how often do you cycle?
I try and get out 3 times a week, depending on the weather. I'm sort of a fair weather cyclist, but I try and get out 3 to 4 times a week, get about 80 miles in.
Okay, well, you sort of answered this question, part of it. What sort of bicycle or bicycles do you currently pedal? If you've got more than one, which one is your favourite?
My favorite is a used Cube. It's a used Cube that I bought about 5 years ago. It's 2011, and it's the bike that I use when I'm back in the States in Seattle, Washington.
Okay. So do you have a sort of around-town bike?
My around-town bike is a Marin that I brought over here, and I've had for about 20 years, and it's basically a bike that I can take off-road or on-road.
And do you take that to work? Do you cycle to work?
That's what I take to work.
You cycle it, you could get it stolen there, possibly. Okay, now, Ken, well, you're a man of all seasons for cycling. Basket, saddlebag, pannier or rucksack? Which is your preferred carrying stuff on your bike method?
Probably pannier.
Yeah, any reason?
It's easier. It doesn't get down around my neck. I can shove a briefcase in there, hook it on quickly and get it off.
What's the longest distance you've ever cycled?
The longest is 82 miles when I did a charity ride from London to Cambridge for pancreatic cancer action. And it's a ride that I'd always wanted to do. And I wasn't able to do the Cambridge to London ride because that was always in July, and that's usually when I'm back in the U.S.
So what would be the perfect dream cycle ride for you, Ken? Whereabouts in the world would it be, and with whom?
I think I would love to spend a week cycling around the Chianti region in Italy.
Oh, nice.
And I would love to do it with my colleague and good cycling friend who goes out with me on Sunday mornings, Shankar Balasubramanian.
Okay. And do you prefer cycling solo or in the company of other cyclists?
I like to go solo when I want to relax and take pictures in the countryside. I like to go with Shankar when
Spin
I like a nice conversation.
Sorry, we finished. We never know. We never know the rest of that journey. This is so annoying. But the rules say we have to stop, doesn't it, Rob?
Right.
That's right. The rules are like that, aren't they? Now, I think that's very good, Ken. You're a very interesting man. Actually, it's a question I'd like to ask you as a man from across the pond who's moved to Cambridge. Which one improvement do you think would encourage more people to enjoy cycling here in Cambridge?
Oh, in Cambridge. I mean, to be honest, I think that compared to cycling in the U.S., it's so much easier cycling here in Cambridge. It's brilliant. I mean, I feel so much more confident. And it probably I shouldn't, but I feel much more confident and safe cycling on the roads around Cambridge than I do in the U.S. So to a certain extent, I think it's just getting people out there more, giving them access to good bicycles. And I don't even think it's the lack of lanes, to be honest, not around Cambridge, maybe other parts of the UK. But I think it's just promoting it more and getting probably more family-oriented activities.
Yeah, see, that's the problem, isn't it? Because other people who've come from overseas to live in Cambridge, they always say to me, what are you people always moaning about cycling facilities here in Cambridge? It's a great place to cycle. They don't have a cause much at all, if I'm being honest about it. Now, got my wonderful guests here, and can you believe it? The finishing line, well, it's just around the corner, another 5 minutes away or so. So, we are going to be back next week or Christmas Eve, which is a rather wonderful gift from the editor and scheduler here. And we're going to be doing it slightly differently as well next week. So if you want to find out more, you pop onto the Behind the Bike Shed Facebook page, because hopefully then I can get away with what I want to get away with and they won't stop me doing it. So anyway, we shall see about that. I'd like to ask you, Rachel, what would you like cycling gift for Christmas?
What would I like as a cycling gift for Christmas? Everything. I don't know, really.
You hold that thought for a second, actually. You can come back next week and join the crowd and tell us then. What I'd like to ask, actually, while I've got you here, because you blog about this quite often, what is it about women and cycle shorts? There always seems to be a constant discussion about the perfect pair. See, Becky's nodding as well. do you have experience of that, Becky?
Yeah, there's loads of discussions in my women's group. I've got like a WhatsApp group with all the ladies that I've ridden with. Like the thickness of the chamois, the width of the chamois, the length of the shorts. Like, how high up they come? Can you go for a wee in them? Like, not in the short, obviously, but are they easy to get down?
Too much information. I'm going to interrupt you there again. I'm going to flip back to Rachel, because Rachel's blogged about this. So, Rachel, describe the perfect pair of cycling shorts for women. Pretend you're interested, Ken and Rob.
The perfect pair of cycling shorts for women is... Primal.
Oh, no, you're fully, yeah, okay.
So the ones that I wear, so they have a four-way reduction on the chamois, so it's not like a foam that will just crush. It reduces and sort of molds your body shape, really. And there's like different, not all chamois are created equal, so you'll have a chamois which is good for riding off-road, a chamois that's good for long-distance riding. If you're a commuter cyclist, there's sort of all different types. And also some that have a wider seat, for free sit bones. There's so many different types. And again, sort of it's not always going cheap. You know, like you go to a local shop and pick up a pair for a couple of quid, or I think you need to invest in that, in a good pair of cycling shorts, just as much as you would if you were going to have a bike fit. I think the two kind of go hand in hand, so... Yeah.
So there you go. Well done. A fashion tip. Rob's sitting there nodding his head as if he knows anything about women's fashion, honestly.
Well, actually, my garage is full of women's cycling shorts.
Get careful, Rob.
Full of them.
You need to explain it. Yeah, I think you need to explain why now you've said that.
Yeah.
well, having run a shop with cycling shorts and all sorts of cycling wear in, and having pretty equal amounts of women's and men's gear there, exactly the problem that's been discussed there. It's such an individual thing that I've got a lot of attempts at shorts which just don't work for women.
So there we go. So Rachel, it's a pair of shorts you're having for Christmas, okay? So don't worry about thinking about anything else. Now, Becky, if people want to support your campaign, get involved, it's hashtag
climb higher together, or Instagram at @try_raving, @try_raving.
Okay, do you want to say it one more time? Just say it one more time. We broke up a bit, please.
It's all right. So it's hashtag climb higher together, and my Instagram page where everything goes on is @try underscore raving, R-A-V-I-N-G. Don't ask about that.
And if you want to support the great work Ken and his colleagues are doing, I guess that's their cancer research they just look for.
Look for cancer research, you can.
And have you been affected by lack of funds because of COVID?
I think there is some significant impact on the operations of Cancer Research UK, and there is going to be decreased funding for basic research in cancer.
So thank you so much for my guest today. A special thanks to guest on the bike, Ken Seaman, who's from Cancer Research UK. Special thanks to Rebecca Davis. Thank you for coming back again. Becky, say hi to everyone at the Chatteris Cycling Club. We will get out to see you, I promise. We'll do something live from here one day or thereabouts. And thank you as well, Becky Hare, for joining us as well. Hopefully you'll be back again soon. And I suspect I have to say thanks to you, Rob. I don't know why, and I'm sure you'll be back anyway, whether I want you or not. You've been listening to Behind the Bike Shed here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Big thanks to Rob Chipperfield and all the tech team here at Cambridge 105. We shall be back. We shall see you next time.